This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is Karen Hales reading Discover Magazine, March 2024. Technology. Are private conversations truly private? Encryption could protect you. Several popular messaging apps, including Messenger, Signal, Telegram, and WhatsApp, use end-to-end encryption. Imagining opening your front door wide open and inviting the world to listen in on your most private conversations. Unthinkable, right? Yet in the digital realm, people inadvertently leave doors ajar, potentially allowing hackers, tech companies, service providers, and security agencies to peek into their private communications. Much depends on the applications you use and the encryption standards that the apps uphold. End-to-end encryption is a digital safeguard for online interactions. It's used by many of the more popular messaging apps. Understanding end-to-end encryption is crucial for maintaining privacy in people's increasingly digital lives. While end-to-end encryption effectively secures messages, it is not foolproof against all cyber threats and requires users to actively manage their privacy settings. As a cybersecurity researcher, I believe that continuous advancements in encryption are necessary to safeguard private communications as the digital piracy landscape evolves. How end-to-end encryption works. When you send a message via an app using end-to-end encryption, your app acts like a cryptographer and encodes your message with a cryptographic key. This process transforms your message into a cipher, a jumble of seemingly random characters that conceal the true essence of your message. This ensures that the message remains a private exchange between you and your recipient, safeguarded against unauthorized access, whether from hackers, service providers, or surveillance agencies. Should any eavesdrops intercept it, they would only see gibberish and would not be able to decipher the code without the decryption key. When the message reaches its destination, the recipient's apps use the corresponding decryption key to unlock the message. This decryption key, securely stored on the recipient's device, is only key capable of deciphering the message, translating the encrypted text back to a readable format. This form of encryption is called public key or asymmetric cryptography. Each party who communicates using this form of encryption has two encryption keys, one public and one private. You share your public key with whoever wants to communicate securely with you, and they use it to encrypt their messages to you. But that key can't be used to decrypt their messages. Only your private key, which you do not share with anyone, can do that. In practice, you don't have to think about sharing keys. Messaging apps that use end-to-end encryption handle that behind the scenes. You and the party you're communicating with securely just have to use the same app. Who has end-to-end encryption? End-to-end encryption is used by major messaging apps and services to safeguard users' privacy. Apple's iMessage integrates end-to-end encryption for messages exchanged between iMessage users, safeguarding them from external access. However, messages sent or received from non-iMessage users, such as SMS text or to Android phones, do not benefit from this level of encryption. Google has begun rolling out end-to-end encryption for Google Messages, the default messaging app on many Android devices. The company is aiming to modernize traditional SMS with more advanced features, including better privacy. However, this encryption is currently limited to one-on-one chats. Facebook Messenger also uses end-to-end encryption, but it is not enabled by default. Users need to start a quote-unquote a secret conversation to encrypt their messages end-to-end. End-to-end encrypted chats are currently available only in the Messenger apps on iOS and Android, not on Facebook Chat or Messenger.com. WhatsApp stands out for its robust privacy features, implementing end-to-end encryption by default for all forms of communication within the app. Signal, often heralded by cybersecurity experts as the gold standard for secure communication, offers end-to-end encryption across all its messaging and calling features by default. Signal's commitment to privacy is reinforced by its open-source protocol, which allows independent experts to verify its security. Telegram offers a nuanced approach to privacy. While it provides strong encryption, its standard chats do not use end-to-end encryption. For that, users must initiate quote-unquote secret chats. It is essential to not only understand the privacy features offered by these platforms, but also how to manage their settings to ensure that the highest level of security of each app offers. With varying levels of protection across services, the responsibility often falls on the user to choose messaging apps wisely and to opt for those that provide end-to-end encryption by default. Is end-to-end encryption effective? The effectiveness of end-to-end encryption in safeguarding privacy is a subject of much debate. While it significantly enhances security, no system is entirely foolproof. Skilled hackers with sufficient resources, especially those backed by security agencies, can sometimes find ways around it. Additionally, end-to-end encryption does not protect against threats posed by hacked devices or phishing attacks, which can compromise the security of the communications. The coming era of quantum computing poses a potential risk to end-to-end encryption because quantum computers could theoretically break the current encryption methods, highlighting the need for continuous improvements in encryption technology. Nevertheless, for the average user, end-to-end encryption offers a robust defense against most forms of digital eavesdropping and cyber threats. As you navigate around the evolving landscape of digital privacy, the question remains: what steps should you take to ensure that the continued protection of your private conversations in an increasingly interconnected world? Mind, instead of making us nervous, audiences can motivate us to do better. A concept called social facilitation says that the pressure of an audience or our coworkers watching us can motivate us to perform better or work harder. Many runners know the feeling well. Miles of training can feel sluggish and uninspiring. And then, on race day, the course is filled with other runners as well as spectators. The steps seem to come easier and faster. Scientists have long understood that people can perform better on certain tasks when others are watching. But after the COVID-19 hit, spectators disappeared from the sidelines in the stadiums. When the events resumed without fans, scientists had the opportunity to further study the relationship between audiences and motivation, a concept called social facilitation. Why do people act differently when watched? The idea behind social facilitation is that having an audience motivates people to do better than they would if they were alone. Although clinical trials and data analysis into social facilitation has spanned more than a century, neuroscience studies involving social facilitation are new. These studies are helping to determine what happens in the brain when people look on and the performance improves, or in some cases, declines. In a 2018 study in social cognitive and affective neuroscience, researchers wanted to see what was happening in the brain when a person knew others were watching them and their performance improved. We often think that being watched by people can be bad and that it will lead to worse performance, but I think that might not necessarily be the case, says the study's lead author, Vikram C. S. Cheeb, an associate professor of biomedical engineering at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Cheeb and his research team recruited participants who agreed to perform newly learned tasks while undergoing functional magnetic resonance imaging, MRI. The task involved using a type of handheld controller to move to a target on a screen to the desired location. In some trials, the participants knew that they would receive $25. In other trials, the participants knew that they were being watched. The psychological advantages, incentives of being watched. When a participant was being watched, they were actually in the fMRI machine, so they couldn't see their spectators. But there was a screen inside the machine. Before the test began, participants saw a live feed of the observers off to the side, watching their every move. Glimpsing the observers was enough to spark social facilitation. In the context of the study, it seemed to improve the performance, Chib says. In the imaging, researchers saw activity in the dorsal medial prefrontal cortex and the ventral medial prefrontal cortex, meaning that the brain was processing being watched as the type of reward. It seems that the social areas of the brain interact with the value areas to motivate our performance, Chib says. Visualizing rewards. Rewards are motivating, whether it came in the form of a $25 check or the sense that others were watching, and that can inspire performance. For some people who are performing without an audience, Chip says future research should determine whether visualizing an audience could spark motivation. If you think about how all those motivational influences of the social incentives are processed, we might come up with better ways to do well in those situations, he says. The discovery of social facilitation. Psychologist Norman Triplett first introduced the concept of social facilitation, or the motivation to perform in others, in 1898. Triplett analyzed the data from cyclists who rode in races and compared their performances to when they raced alone against the clock and when they rode with a group that included a pace setter. Triplett found that the cyclists rode faster in the races or as a part of a group than they did during solo. During the trial. After Triplett analyzed the cycling data, he conducted a clinical experiment to test if children performed better on a simple task when they were competing against another child. In his study, his little participants were tasked by turning fishing wheels as fast as they could. The children repeated the task alone and then in competition with another participant. Children turned their wheels faster and worked harder when they were in competition with another child, supporting Triplett's hypothesis. When is social facilitation effective? More than a century of research has taught scientists that social facilitation doesn't apply in every scenario, and what motivates one person may not work for another. A 2021 study in the International Review of Sports and Exercise Psychology found that in the past 100 years, there have been 82 studies with more than 7,000 participants that measured social facilitation in movement-related tasks. These studies found that the type of task mattered, and while the presence of spectators inspires some performances, others are hindered. In general, studies found that conditioning activities like running or skiing are more likely to be performed better in the presence of others. Tasks involving coordination, i.e. shooting at a target, are more likely to be hindered when others are watching. But when the recent global pandemic shut down stadiums, researchers found significant exceptions. When is social facilitation not effective? A 2021 study in the Psychology of Sports and Exercise looked at the results of the World Cup biathlon that took place between November 2020 through March 2021 in Australia, Czech Republic, Finland, Germany, Italy, and Sweden. In a biathlon, the participants have both a conditioning activity, cross-country skiing, and a coordination activity, target shooting, which allowed the researchers to consider the two types of tasks without the audience present. The researchers compared the results with the past World Cups when spectators had been present. They found that male participants did better on the conditioning task, the ski portion, with an audience watching, but their performance deteriorated on the coordination task, target shooting. In contrast, the female athletes skied worse when people were watching, but shot better when the audience looked on. The author's studies concluded that the past research into social facilitation has not included enough female participants. While there has been a century of research on the concept, there is still more to uncover. Technology. Why Meta lenses are set to revolutionize smartphones. Flat screens that stamp onto silicone chips could make cameras cheaper and simpler. But attempts to create meta lenses using light-based lithography have so far faltered. What's needed is another way to make meta lenses that is compatible with a large-scale manufacturer of chips. Enter Andrew McClung and his colleagues at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, who have demonstrated exactly this. A new way to make meta lenses that is compatible with the chip manufacturer. They say their approach has a potential for widespread adoption in the consumer electronics and imaging systems. Conventional lenses are generally made up by pouring glass or plastic into a mold and then grinding and polishing it into the required shape. If used in a mobile phone or similar imaging systems, these lenses have to be carefully aligned with the chip and glued in place. That's fiddly, complicated, and expensive. In the last decade, physicists have begun making meta lenses using a process called electric beam lithography, which can carve tiny features into substrates. But because their electrons are difficult to control, this process was not suitable for large-scale chip manufacture. This generally relies on light-based lithography, which cannot make the meta lenses at the required scale. So instead of the conventional optical lithography, McClung and company have perfected essentially the opposite technique. Instead of carving the pattern into a substrate, they imprint it, a bit like stamping a pattern onto a clay tablet. This technique, called nanoprint lithography, begins by casting a long nanoscale stamp made of a silicon polymer. They then press the stamp into the synthetic resin called polymethyl methacrylate, or PMMA. This resin sits on top of the silicon nitride on a top layer of silicon dioxide. Print charming. This imprinting process leaves a pattern in the shape of a metal lens that can be etched into the substrate. The result is a pattern of silicon nitride pillars sitting on top of the silicon dioxide substrate, a metal lens. McClung and company show how this technique can recreate lenses 6 millimeters in diameter that accurately focus visible light to a near fraction limit and focusing efficiency of 81%. By comparison, a similar lens using electron beam lithography achieved focusing efficiency of 89%. That's interesting work and has the potential to be used in current mass production facilities. The scalable fabrication of high-efficiency metasurfaces operating in the visible wavelength range opens us up for opportunities for their widespread adoption in consumer applications, say the researchers. Cameras and smartphones, webcams, and the like are only a few of the applications. Meta lenses can be used to channel light through chips, creating complex 3D designs for processing light. This advancement enables the development of highly efficient and compact optical systems that can be seemingly integrated into various applications, says McClung Company. If they are right, meta lenses should be coming to a smartphone near you soonish. Health. The only gains you'll get from SARMS are a list of health issues. Information about the selective androgen receptor modulators can be confusing. Here's what you need to know. In recent years, many people have turned to SARMs, selective androgen receptive modulators, as a safer alternative to steroids, but that's not a good idea. Though SARMs are marketed as dietary supplements, the FDA categorizes them as unregulated drugs, and they can be dangerous. Here's what you need to know. What are SARMs? SARMs are compounds that mimic the effects of testosterone and anabolic steroids. They were developed in the early 2000s in an attempt to find an alternative to anabolic steroids in the medical applications, such as treating bone loss and muscle wasting caused by osteoporosis, cancer, heart failure, and other diseases. Jeffrey Crawford is a researcher at the Duke University Cancer Institute, and he's done some of the research on these drugs. SARMs, he explains, are created by altering anabolic steroids so that they bind only to certain tissues and not to others in the hopes of limiting their side effects. Over the past decade, Crawford and others have studied these drugs in clinical trials, but none of these studies have resulted in a remarkable drug. No such drug has been approved for any use at all, medical or otherwise. Are SARMs safe? A study published in May 2023 in the journal Exobiotics reviewed the existing scientific evidence to answer the question, are SARMs safe for performance enhancements, particularly in athletes and military personnel? The researchers looked at the studies done on these drugs during the last decade, as well as case reports of people using the drugs outside of the research. The results were sobering. The review found evidence that the SARMs can cause a variety of health problems, including liver and muscle damage, tendon ruptures, and cardiovascular events. The study's authors concluded that the recreational SARM use should strongly be discouraged. In April of that year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, issued a warning about the side effects of these drugs for bodybuilding or athletic enhancement. According to the FDA, SARMs could potentially cause, in addition to the harms listed above, sleep disturbances, sexual dysfunction, infertility, miscarriage, and testicular shrinkage, to just name a few of the negative outcomes that have been associated with SARMs. Existing clinical studies on SARMs have focused on people with illnesses such as cancer and have exposed patients to the drugs for only a short time. CrossFirst research has shown that SARMs have the potential to help cancer patients suffering from cachexia, a wasting syndrome that occurs in many chronic illnesses, especially cancer. However, several of these investigations were stopped due to the lack of a benefit, and no SARM is currently approved by the FDA, says Chase Henderson, an endocrinologist and an associate professor at the Division of Diabetes, Endocrinology, and Metabolism at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Evidence for non-medical applications is scarce. This is not something that's been looked at specifically, performance enhancement outside of medical conditions, Hendrickson says. Are SARMs legal? In the United States, SARMs can be sold for research purposes only, and selling them for any other purpose is illegal. The World Anti-Doping Agency has banned them. However, SARMs are easily obtained online. According to studies, social media influencers are increasing their appeal. The important thing to know about these drugs is that they are not approved by the FDA and are unregulated. This means that the manufacturers of SARMs are not following FDA guidelines. In fact, one study found that many drugs sold on the internet and marketed as SARMs contained other substances, including other drugs. Only 52% of the samples actually tested contained SARMs. Frequently asked questions about SARMs. Are SARMs bad for you? These drugs are still being tested in clinical settings. However, there has been little to no research involving their use in young people for bodybuilding or enhancing athletic performance. The evidence that does exist suggests that SARMs can be dangerous. What are SARMs used for? At this point, there is no approved use of these drugs. Many people are buying them from unregulated manufacturers and using them to enhance athletic performance, to increase muscle mass, or just to change the look of their bodies. Accordingly to the medical experts, this is risky. Do SARMs work? Studies have suggested SARMs can be effective in treating wasting syndromes. There is little but to no credible evidence about their effectiveness in non-medical uses. Do SARMs damage organs? Some studies have shown SARMs can cause liver failure and increase the risk of a heart attack or stroke. Are SARMs hard on your heart? Yes. SARMs have been shown to contribute to adverse cardiovascular events. Studies indicate that excessive use of SARMs can increase the risk of high blood pressure, which can lead to heart disease. Do SARMs lower testosterone? There are many different types of SARMs, and they work in different ways, but it's possible that some could lower testosterone levels, even as they increase the effects of testosterone by stimulating the androgen receptor in some tissues, explains Hickerson. This article is not offering medical advice and should be used for only informational purposes. Environment: stopping the spread of invasive species. Citizen scientists step up to stop the spread of invasive mosquitoes, giant hornets, kudzu, and exotic species. Burmese pythons, northern giant hornets, fig buttercups. Okay, not all invasive species sound frightening, but all of them destabilize ecosystems, threaten native species, and or spread pathogens. That's why, in honor of the Invasive Species Awareness Week, we are sharing with you what you can do to join researchers identifying, monitoring, and controlling the most destructive exotic species. Stop the spread of invasive plants. Invasive vines like kudzu and English ivy rapidly cover and smother native trees to death. Other exotic plants crowd out the more important native plants, and some are toxic to local flora and fauna. Nature's Notebook has several campaigns, including Pesky Plants and Shady Invaders, where you can help scientists monitor these invasive plants. They also offer pest control to track invasive insects that threaten native trees. Help control disease-causing mosquitoes. While we all love the creatures great and small, it's okay to love mosquitoes somewhat less. Yes, they are important to many aquatic and terrestrial food chains, but they cause misery and disease to millions of people. and increasingly exotic species are holding on to new regions. Join NASA-supported Globe Observer Mosquito Habitat Mapper project to help protect and control outbreaks. One fish, two fish, these are new fish. The ferociousness and venomous lionfish is just one of the 46 exotic fish species reported in Florida waters by the iNaturalist Project, Florida's non-native fish. And that project is just one of 2,670 invasive species projects available on iNaturalist. To free yourself from the tyranny of too many choices, add your locality or organism of interest in your research term, i.e., invasive Maryland's plants, to winnow things down. How you can help. Invasive species programs are very local. Species that are a problem in one area may not be a concern for others. Therefore, visit the citizen science projects listed above, sign up, and search for activities in your area. For a comprehensive list of invasive species in your area, visit the USDA's Natural Invasive Species Information Center. To find a state-by-state resources in the United States, visit https://www.invasivespeciesinfo.gov/US. And for global resources listed by continent and country, visit https://www.invasivespeciesinfo.gov/international. Finally, visit www.scistarter.org Project Finder to find additional citizen science projects not listed here. New projects are being added all the time. This is Karen Hales reading Discover Magazine, March 2024.